Do you have a loved one or family member who's facing a terminal or long-term illness? What can you do to make a difference?
We'll share practical tips you should know today on Real Family Talk. Join us. Welcome to Real Family Talk. In today's episode, we are discussing how to navigate terminal and long-term illnesses as a family. We'll discuss what you can do to help a loved one in this situation and why your approach can make a significant impact.
Every year, thousands of people all over the world face long-term or terminal illnesses. Even if someone has been seriously ill for some time, receiving a terminal diagnosis can be devastating. During this time, people experience a wide range of emotions as they come to terms with their new reality. What can you do if someone you love becomes seriously ill or receives a life-threatening diagnosis? On today's program, Dr. Maya Thomas, a licensed marriage and family therapist, joins us to discuss what we can do when our family is facing terminal or long-term illnesses. Dr. Thomas, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's great to have you again. And I know that this is a topic that is near and dear to your heart and something that you've been working with for a long time. And more we're hearing of so many prevalent cases of cancer, Alzheimer's, these terminal illnesses that are not just impacting the individual, but the family as well. Mm. So can you give us a glimpse into how these illnesses are impacting our family life?
Yes. It's important to say, first of all, that they are impacting the family, because oftentimes the family gets kind of put to the side and everyone's focusing on the patient and how they're doing and their prognosis and diagnosis and treatment. But family members are also dealing with a lot of emotional upheaval. My mom's a geriatrician, so she works with 65 plus, and she's also certified palliative care and hospice care, which are two different types of care. Yeah. And so she works quite a bit with these folk, and she talks to me a lot about the idea of the relationship before the diagnosis dictating how the family members will be able to manage this diagnosis and treatment. So it's all these underlying things that come up to the front when we're facing our own mortality and such difficult times for the family.
Yeah.
So the truth is, this is all very involved and impactive on the lives of people. And I know there's a difference between palliative care, which doesn't necessarily focus on curing the individual, rather making them comfortable and making sure that they have their needs met, whatever those are. So tell us more about palliative care and some of the things we can do to help as loved ones, as our relatives or people that we are caring for are going through palliative care.
Yes. So palliative care is so important when our loved ones are dealing with serious illness. And when I say serious illness, I mean chronic illness, so it's not going away, where the treatment still leaves the patient with significant symptoms and discomfort. So I'm not talking about illnesses where, you know, you take a pill a day and you're doing great. I'm talking about serious illnesses where it's not going away and the treatment is still not able to fully cover everything. So for an example, a cancer patient who gets diagnosed with cancer, they'll be working with their cancer doctor or oncologist to be able to treat the cancer. But there may be a host of other symptoms that affect their quality of life or the activities of daily living. That's where a palliative care provider comes in and why it's so important for family members to know to ask for a palliative care provider. Because sometimes the oncologist is so focused on the cancer treatment, they're not thinking about quality of life, activities of daily living. How is this person going to work? How are they managing family? How are they doing the things they need to be doing? How's the family dealing with them? So a palliative care provider steps in and does a full assessment and then reaches out to get folk plugged in where they need to be, and that's where I step in. I get often called in to do family work because a lot of the existential questions that come up that impact those symptoms.
Yeah, you know, that's really amazing as you explain it, the whole way in which we can use palliative care. But mm-hmm. I feel like oftentimes families are so afraid mm-hmm. to even seek out palliative care. Mm-hmm. It's almost as if in the past we didn't know what palliative care was. And then we heard about it, and then it just seemed like, oh, okay, that those are the people you go to when they've given you the prognosis that you're gonna die. Mm. So how do we change people's perceptions? Why is it important? And how does palliative care help, even with what you're saying, negotiating the mental health of the patient and all these other issues that arise because of this illness?
Yes, that's such an important question. And let me tell you why. Because there's a difference between palliative care and hospice care. And I think the general public doesn't know about the difference. Because palliative care doesn't assume that there's only 6 months or less to live, which is hospice care. Hospice care is about 6 months or less to live. We're not trying to cure anything at this point. We're not trying to treat anything. We're just trying to keep the patient as comfortable as possible, the family as comfortable as possible to ease the passing. But palliative care is where we still would like our patients and families to live as best as possible with these serious illnesses. So sometimes family members don't want to ask for palliative care because they don't want to give up face that reality. But it's not, we can still live with serious illnesses. We can. And it's just a matter of getting those whole person supports in place.
I'm just so happy that we're bringing out this distinction, because I have to be honest and say that when I first heard about palliative care, it was within the context of my grandmother, who was 99 years old. Mm. And I was sitting next to a doctor on the airplane, and he says, have you spoken to your grandmother about her last wishes? And, you know, what do you call the will and the
living will
that you have? And he explained to me that he was a palliative care doctor. But in my head, my association was like, well, that's a wonderful thing. But I have always thought it really was more for preparing you for hospice. Mm. So do you want to share a little bit more as to how we can help families get this palliative care? Because I also have found that it's difficult. Like, you will call the hospital or the hospice center or the doctor, mm-hmm. and a lot of people don't know how to refer you to mm-hmm. a palliative care specialist.
Yes. So it's so funny. The majority of doctors are so focused on their specialty or their area, it's hard to kind of branch out. And that's why I love our Adventist message, because we talk about whole person care. We talk about a team approach. Now, a palliative care provider could be a doctor or a nurse practitioner. And when you're talking to your doctor, they may be so focused on their treatment that they're not thinking about those types of things. So I would encourage you to reach out to your patient relations coordinator.
That's the person.
Yes, you can reach out.
Patient relations coordinator.
You can ask for a social worker. You can ask for a chaplain. Any one of those can be able to kind of help you. Hey, we're looking for somebody who can talk to us about all the quality of life. We're talking about religion, we're talking about culture, we're talking about social, emotional, physical, spiritual supports. So how can we get a palliative care consult in here who will ask those broader big picture questions?
That's really good. That's super good. In fact, when we return, we'll continue to talk with Dr. Maya Thomas, our licensed marriage and family therapist who is visiting today, about how you can help someone facing a serious illness. Stay with us. Today on Real Family Talk, we are discussing how to face long-term and terminal illnesses as a family.
We are talking with licensed marriage and family therapist, Dr. Maya Thomas. We're talking about long-term and terminal illnesses. We discussed the issue and the importance of palliative care. Research has shown that family and friends can play a huge role in helping patients deal with a chronic or terminal illness. When a person is suffering from a terminal or chronic illness, it's important that they feel truly cared about. How people interact with them can have a significant impact.
In this segment, we're talking about the grieving process. Naturally, when someone is facing a serious illness, they start to think about death and loss. They're flooded with a range of emotions. And it's important to make room for grief and loss for both the patient and the family. Dr. Thomas, can you tell us some more about the phases that patients and family members go through during this time?
So I'll start with the case example. I'm going to call him Lee. I was working with Lee, who was in his 80s. And palliative care had been called in because he was dealing with some serious illnesses, lots of organs kind of starting to shut down, but still there wasn't an end date in sight, and he was able to manage. And during this time, which often happens with existential issues coming up, that's why palliative care is important, because these issues come up and they can refer out. He was dealing with the issue of a lot of irreparable or seemingly irreparable relationships with his children, who were all adults now, had families of their own. His wife had passed away a long time ago, and he felt very much alone. So he was referred to us, to me, and I was working with him. And grief and loss shows up in a lot of unique ways.
Doesn't it, though?
It does. In this particular case example, the kids, these adult kids, were so angry and resentful about this father who hadn't emotionally been there all throughout their lives. And now when it's kind of sad and we don't know how much time he has left, now he wants to talk about things.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of anger, a lot of resentment. I remember me and my therapist were sitting there and trying to work with this family. We were all in a family room together and thinking to ourselves, there is little to no compassion or empathy in this room right now.
That's right.
Because there's just so many layers of emotions, and that grief and loss was showing up in so many kind of barbed attacking types of ways. But it was still grief. It was still loss. Loss of dad that had been going on for years and years. And now this illness is just making it so much more present.
And the,
well, I was going to ask, is it that you're talking about the resentment.
Yes.
Of course, this is very natural in families. And of course, now the father is ill and he's very elderly. And now it's calling on the reservoir of emotions of these adult children. We're probably 60 now or in their 50s and with children themselves. And it's hard for them to do it because they're angry.
Yes.
You know, so when he needs the most compassion, they don't have a whole lot of compassion.
Right.
So that's where you come in.
Yes.
To try to help them connect those dots and see if we can help salvage this man's exit in a more compassionate way.
Right, right.
So what I'm interested in knowing too is, so who initiated that call? Was it him? Was it a family member? Was it someone at the hospital that recognized that there was no compassion or empathy in this family?
It was him talking to the people as best as he could, because his verbal ability wasn't that great. Talking to the team at the hospital and saying all of these regrets and griefs that he had, and it was clearly impacting his physical health and physical functioning, which is why palliative care is so important.
Right, the holistic, as
yes.
you mentioned.
Yes. Yes. Yes, his ability to tolerate pain, to eat, to digest, all of that. So they referred us because of that quote-unquote non-compliance, which wasn't non-compliance. It was just his difficulty managing these existential and familial things. So he came and then the kids came.
Well, what's wonderful is that the kids decided to come.
Mm.
So what would you say to a family? Because I hear your compassion, and we're probably going off a little bit, but I think it's important because I hear you saying that you and your therapist, your associate, came in and you recognize, like, you know, there were broken relationships beforehand, but this is an opportunity now to find some healing. What would you say to families out there who are confronted with this? Because we do see this. We see this
absolutely
regularly. Almost every single time someone is chronically ill or terminally ill, all of the baggage comes to the surface. How do you help a family? What do you say to a family who's confronted with this, who's saying, he wasn't there for me, he never showed up, and now he's dying, now he's leaving us, and now he wants us and he needs us.
Yes.
How do you help a family through that?
Yes, it's not easy. It's not easy for anybody involved. It's not easy for him, for Lee. It's not easy for his four kids, for the grandkids who weren't a part of anything before and so don't understand the resentment as much. One of the big things we talked about was this idea of grief and loss, even before the illness, and the need to discuss that. And talking about just a lot of wonderings. I wonder if Lee, your dad, talking to the kids, I wonder if your dad, Lee, is more amenable to hearing how you feel now, how you felt then, currently, than he ever did before. Can we try? Can we try? Can we open up? And if it doesn't work, at least you know you tried. And when you're at the funeral, you'll know that you did the best you could and you won't have these regrets and resentments that carry on for years and years. That perspective was helpful.
So essentially, it's you helping them to transition in a more humane and compassionate way,
mm-hmm.
not only for their father, but for themselves.
It's healing for that
for
individual.
Themselves, mm-hmm. Yes.
So you're trying to help them, because we often deal with people who then live with the regret,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's like, oh, I wish I had said this mm-hmm. to my father, or how do I forgive someone who they never asked for my forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
So what I hear you saying is you're taking a proactive approach. You're appealing to their emotional side to say, I'm trying to help you as well to mm-hmm. overcome. So what other tips would you share with a family member? You shared a few with us, and I think we're supposed to put them up on the screen, of how family members and caregivers can make a huge difference for themselves and for the family. So one of the things that I think you shared is to offer a listening ear.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So who's offering a listening ear?
Yes. And this is so important, because it's not just the family members or caregivers offering a listening ear. It's important for the patient to also offer a listening ear. That's the relational part of it. If I can suggest one thing, it's talk more. And if you can't talk more, spend time more. Mm-hmm. Communicate. Find ways of communicating with each other. Because if you can connect in that way during this difficult time and find those ways of knowing each other, then when it's time to say goodbye, and we know it's never really goodbye in
Adventist Church.
But when it's time to say, okay, I'm not going to see you for a long time, maybe a long time before I see you again, then you're able to deal with that grief and loss so much better. So it's little things. Tell me about when you were a kid. Tell me some stories, grandpa or dad or grandma. Tell me about the favorite parts of foods that you like to eat. Just these little simple things are so meaningful when we're faced with our own mortality.
That's so beautiful. And it also helps the person who's confronting death, if they are in fact,
mm-hmm.
It's more than just a chronic illness, to die peacefully,
mm-hmm.
right? Because, you know, sometimes you see people go and they're going in an agitated way.
Mm-hmm.
So I love what you're saying about talking for the patient. Because sometimes, you know, we think, oh, that's for the caregiver, mm-hmm. but for the patient also to be able to listen. Okay, how about respect your loved one's sense of dignity?
Yes. Oh my goodness, that's so huge. That's so huge. And my mom talks about this all the time. When your family members are dealing with a serious illness, whether it's terminal, which is why we need hospice care, or just palliative, which is we have a long way to go, but it's still a difficult journey, there may be certain things that they choose they want to do or don't want to do. Well, I don't want to take that medication. Well, I don't want to go out in the sunshine. Well, I don't want to do that type of it. Well, I don't want to eat the kale juice. You know, it may be that there's certain things, and finding ways to let go of that control,
because allow them to have some say,
yes,
some dignity.
Yes, some say is a great way of talking about it. Say is dignity. Control, autonomy is dignity.
Yes.
Even if it means that their death comes quicker. And I know this is so hard.
Yeah.
I know this is so hard for family members because it's your loss. Yeah. You're the one left
the
behind. Yes, yes. And it's letting them be able to make those decisions, even if it's so hard to watch. And then you go find your support. You go to therapy. You talk to your friends and loved ones to be able to be there for them.
That is such a great point. So we're going to continue with these points after a short break. Stay with us.
Welcome back to Real Family Talk. We're discussing today the importance of positively navigating terminal and long-term illnesses.
So, Dr. Maya, right before the break, we were going over a few ways in which caregivers or loved ones can be supportive to someone going through a chronic illness or terminal illness. What are some other ways in which caregivers can be of support?
I'm going to say something that could sound controversial, but it's really not. The number one thing a caregiver can do to be supportive is to take care of themselves. And I'll tell you why.
No, I agree.
You agree. Good.
I totally agree.
I'm glad. And I'll tell you why. It's because patients often feel like a burden. And so when they see their caregivers, I mean, the morbidity rate, which is negative impacts on their health, is 80% or higher sometimes for caregivers who are also family members.
Wow.
So it negatively impacts their health. And the patient is watching that as they're trying to kind of ask for what they need. And it's a very difficult dynamic. So for a caregiver or a loved one to take care of themselves, it's like that thing that they say on the airplane. First
put your oxygen mask on first.
Yes, and then put it on your loved one. So take care of yourself as best as possible. And if you're struggling to do that, reach out to your community. We are social beings. We can't do this by ourselves.
I want to jump in and ask.
Yeah.
When you say take care of yourself, exactly what are you saying to them that they must do? Because sometimes people are hearing take care of yourself, but they don't know what it means.
Yes, good question. So we're thinking biopsychosocial spiritual health. Biology, physical health, eat something, sleep. If you're having a hard time sleeping, reach out to your doctor, reach out to those who can help with that. Sleep hygienists, they can help with things like that. So that's that bio part. Psychological, talk about this. You know, talking about this process with somebody who you know cares and wants
friends,
to hear you.
Your pastor, a therapist.
Yes,
even.
It can be physically healing. It overlaps that psychological, physical
part. And that's so important that you keep bringing out the impact of our mental health on our physical being.
Yes.
And I think oftentimes, we don't think about that, but that's that holistic way in which we look at the human body in the Seventh-day Adventist Church.
Yes, there's so many people who have gut issues, digestive issues. It has nothing to do with food, even though food can be helpful.
Yes.
It has to do with stress, with that mental health, with that emotional health.
Mm-hmm.
So take care of yourself biologically, psychologically, socially. Don't isolate. Try hard not to isolate, which is so hard. I always hesitate to say these things to caregivers. Yeah, because they're already overloaded with tasks.
Yeah.
They have so much to do. And here I am saying, do these other things as well.
Right.
But it's so important to put that mask on yourself.
And sometimes do you think that there's such a sense of guilt
mm-hmm.
on the part of the caregiver that if they took time out, something could happen, or they're not giving enough, or they're being selfish. So how do you address that with caregivers?
Yes, maybe a helpful thought is to think of it as I'm taking care of myself, I'm helping relieve the burden feeling
Absolutely.
Of my loved one. When they see me doing better, they feel better.
Because I look better as well.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And,
yes.
And someone who's very ill needs someone who looks decent, like they're not dying.
Yes. It's uplifting. Yeah. Yes, to see
Absolutely.
That. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, biopsychosocial. And then spiritual is the last one.
Yes.
So spiritually, you know, it's hard sometimes to have faith and trust in these moments. And the Bible is chock full of characters who had similar struggles with faith and trust in hard times. So no one is alone with those difficulties. Right. But talk about it. Reach out to your pastor. Reach out to those spiritual mentors to talk about these existential questions of life.
And the Bible has it right there. If you just read those passages, you know, be anxious about nothing, but in everything with prayer and thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God and the peace of God. So if you're a person of faith, employ the spiritual disciplines. Read your Bible. Pray. Take the time to do so by yourself or with someone else.
Yes.
Because you're talking about self-care. Yes.
Yeah. And perhaps that's where the community can come in as well, and making sure that they're also reaching out to the caregiver.
Yes.
Perhaps and offering to relieve them. You know,
yes.
I'll watch your loved one for a few hours today while you go take a walk or a shower even, or get a meal.
Mm-hmm.
So that might be important as well.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, we had one other issue that we wanted to speak about, and that is ambiguous loss. You know, you're still here, you know, but you feel like
the loss that doesn't have a closure.
Yes, because you feel like something is going.
Yes.
You know, it's not all gone, but something is going. How do you deal with that?
Yeah. When we think of loss and grief, sometimes we think of like funerals or someone passing away, and there's such a finite moment to that. But with chronic or terminal illness, they're still there, but they're not there. And it gives rise to this kind of internal struggle for people where I'm grieving you, but you're still talking to me. It's not an easy thing to navigate. Sometimes just naming it is helpful. I'm dealing with ambiguous loss, which is a layered, multi-layered loss where my loved one is here, but they're not the same, but I've still got pieces of them. And so this back and forth, just being able to talk about the sides of you, the parts of you that come up with these could be very helpful.
Thank you, Dr. Maya, for those excellent points that you've made. They will help us as we deal with our family members. So as you think about comforting and supporting those suffering from a serious illness, we encourage you to stay hopeful. After all, Galatians 6:2 reminds us that as we bear one another's burdens, we fulfill the law of Christ.
Thank you for watching Real Family Talk. Join us again when we'll share more about strengthening families and inspiring hope. See you next time.